When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Speaking Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Flemington Car and Truck Country. Best car buying experience ever online at Flemington.com. Award-winning House of Cupcakes, HouseofCupcakes.com, and Casa Gennaro's. Reservations, call 609-683-1212.
And welcome to Movie and a Dinner, which is always difficult to say. That's a Bill Spadia thing, where he tells us to say movie and a dinner because it's better than dinner and a movie. But no one says dinner and a movie.
Yeah, but I actually have his back on that.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. It's just difficult to say.
Yeah, but you gotta let it go.
It would be like, oh, I started a new restaurant. We only sell meatballs and spaghetti, jelly and peanut butter.
You know, when I was in college, in Lancaster, they had these eating parks. And I always was confused by that. Because I'm like, don't you park before you eat?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, eating park didn't work.
And sometimes, if the date goes well, parking can lead to eating. Right? Well, I mean, that's appropriate for the topic we're doing today. First off, we are at beautiful Casa Gennaro again. And this is, we ordered food off the menu.
Yes.
For the first time ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
What did you order? I was in the car.
You're probably going to be disappointed in me, but I got the Polo Margarita because it looked like a chicken parm type thing, and I love chicken parm. And Ben, said it's a classier
chicken parm.
Classier chicken parm, I'm in.
Oh, it's sort of like if chicken parm is a prostitute.
Oh, okay.
Polo Margarita is an escort. And that's appropriate for what we're
that's
talking about
what we're
today,
talking
too.
About.
So if you don't know the format of the show, here's what happens. My lovely wife and I, Christina, come to Casa Gennaro, our favorite place to eat on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. We have a lovely meal, and we discuss two movies. One that I've picked out for her to watch, one that she's picked out for me to watch. And we talk about the movies, we give our review of the movie, and then we talk about what that movie says about the other person, what we've learned about our mate and spouse and life partner having watched this movie that means so much to them. And the two movies that we're doing today are Pretty Woman, that's my wife's choice for me, by Gary Marshall, starring the lovely,
lovely,
the beautiful Richard Gere, and the all rights looking Julia Roberts, the breakthrough role for Miss Julia mm-hmm. Roberts. And the movie that I picked out for my wife is the American classic, one of the defining movies of the second rebellious revolution of the 1990s, Paul Thomas Anderson's Boogie Nights. My wife picked out a movie about prostitution, and I picked out a movie about pornography. That's why we get along.
And it's not going to be a good thing that we learned about each other.
Oh, no, I picked up some tips. I think I know what you want now. I got it. Ooh, here comes calamari. Very nice. Ooh, and also
burrata.
Very nice. Burrata?
Burrata, some stuffed fresh mozzarella.
Ooh, all right.
All right, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Excellent. So,
now, what do you want to talk about first, Jay?
How are you?
Can I tell you why I picked Pretty Woman?
Yeah.
It was one of the first movies I remember seeing in the movie theater that I probably shouldn't be seeing in the movie theater. Like, my Aunt Dee wanted to go, and she took us, and I remember being there thinking, I don't know if I'm old enough to be watching this, but that made it so much more, you know, momentous in my brain.
Now, the movie came out in 1990, so mm-hmm. that would have made you
11 or 12.
3 years old?
No, actually, it made me 11 or 12.
Wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
Wait a second. No. You told me you were much younger than
no,
you actually are.
No, I did not.
How dare you?
So, and I remember that was the first time I ever saw Julia Roberts. And
I think that's the first time most of America saw Julia Roberts.
I did not know, like, why she had that wig on. That was so confusing to me.
Mm.
Like, when she took the wig off, I was like, why would she ever wear a wig? My 11-year-old self couldn't identify with that.
I couldn't identify with it watching the movie this time through.
Hmm.
I'm like, you have beautiful, giant, curly red hair.
Yeah.
I would pay extra for that.
Would you?
Well, if I'm getting a prostitute and then you got like short blonde hair versus like voluminous red beautiful hair.
So fun finding out what your prostitution.
I'm just saying, if I was choosing a prostitute, if I had to choose between short-haired blonde and Julia Roberts red, I'm going red every time, baby.
But he wasn't choosing a prostitute, which I want to say that this movie does a lot of hard work with dancing around what they fell into each other instead of he went and picked out.
Yeah, you got to make it likable. Because, like, if he's out cruising the crackheads at 3 o'clock in the morning for a quickie in the car, it makes it a little bit harder to root for young Edward versus him looking for directions to Beverly Hills. Although,
And he couldn't drive the car or something.
Right. It was a Lotus, and he couldn't drive it, but she could.
Lotus.
Right. Well, so that's our setup, and we don't usually like to chew in everyone's ears.
Oh, I know.
So we got that mozzarella, look at that. We got our lovely appetizer, so we're going to go eat this real fast, and then we're going to come back and talk Pretty Woman. And we're back. We did our best, everybody, to try to eat as quickly as possible, but as my wife said, and I think it's a true statement, the food at Casa Gennaro is not meant to be eaten quickly.
You notice how they class everything up? Like, it's not, like, that calamari is the best calamari.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like, there's no part of this that is half-assed.
Yeah.
See, I think you and I are very unused to not half-assing things, because everything in our life is pretty, like, if you were to cook, like, the greatest meal you ever cooked, your appetizer would be half-assed.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right?
I wouldn't have an appetizer.
Right. I'd be like, hey, did you make an appetizer? And you'd be like, I just made you meatloaf.
Right. I'd probably throw something at you.
Yeah. And you'd be very upset. Uh-huh. But that's not just you. That's me as well.
Right.
Like, if I wrote a book and then they were like, oh, we're going to need a forward to this book, I'd be like, yeah, no, you can just have somebody else write that
out. Poor children.
What do you mean?
Because
we teach them how to enjoy life by half-assing stuff? Yeah, absolutely.
So let me try to see.
By the way. Sometimes you half-ass, and I outdo you by quarter-assing.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at least I'm half.
All right. Let's talk about Pretty Woman.
Walking down the street.
Pretty Woman. By the way, is it problematic now, that song? Will feminists be upset?
Ugh.
If there's, you know, you go like, oh, are you ogling these pretty women that you see walking down the street?
You know, I want to say.
Oh, are these pretty women only women you want to meet because they're pretty? It's like, oh,
I don't
please.
Believe you.
Yeah, don't.
That's not for real.
Yeah, you know what? Believe all women. That's what I say.
I want to say that a lot of these movies, it's like, I want to say that I don't know necessarily, like, I think I want to enjoy them in the time that I saw them, not necessarily now.
Right.
Because when I saw Notting Hill, I'm like, oh, no, don't go in that red door.
Right.
Or Julia Roberts, oh, no, don't go to prostitution. But.
Well, she was already a prostitute. Like when the movie started. So like at no point was Julia Roberts like a fresh-eyed girl in Hollywood going,
She wasn't a prostitute.
Julia Roberts?
Before her career took off?
No. I'm talking about in the movie.
Oh, I thought that was her first time.
No. She's
sure?
Yeah.
I thought she said this was her first.
No, she's fairly new, but she's been doing it, you know, some time in the movie. Believe me, I literally just watched it before we got here. So, you chose this for me, and I'm going to give you my blanket statement up front. I loved it.
Really?
It is such a well-made movie, from the script to the direction. I even liked, you see, Gary Marshall created, if you don't know Gary Marshall, the guy who directed it, he was an old-timey sitcom guy. He created Happy Days and Mork and Mindy and Laverne and Shirley and a whole bunch of those, like, 70s dummy sitcoms. So in every one of the Gary Marshall movies that you see, there's always like some sitcom-y moment, you know, like the I'll have what she's having moment, which he didn't direct When Harry Met Sally, but basically that. He used them judiciously in the movie, and it worked for me. Like, did you like the movie? Or did you like the opera? I did. I almost peed my pants. What? And then Richard Gere said, she liked it better than Pirates of Penzance. That's a terrible sitcom joke, but it worked.
Works in a movie.
I let Annabelle watch the scene where he snaps the necklace on her, like she reaches and he snaps, which is an improv scene. And the laugh that Julia Roberts gives is genuine.
I love her laugh.
And I said that's the moment that everybody in America sort of fell in love with her. I thought that every single aspect of what a movie star is Julia Roberts in this movie. Everything that a weasel is Jason Alexander in this movie. And I want to say that Richard Gere is underrated. Because this watch through, I've seen this movie before, and I liked it best this time. But
what do you think made it better this time?
I think watching Richard Gere, honestly, because his portrayal of Edward Lewis was so subtle, but so lived in and real. Like I sort of believed his trauma in a way that didn't feel like ham-handed. Because like in the movie, he's got issues with his dad. And you can see that he's obviously working out his daddy issues by, like, destroying these companies. And, you know, the one that he's trying to take down over the course of the movie, he sort of bonds with the owner of it because it's a father figure. But his trauma and his sort of, like, reaction to the trauma is so well done that I fell in love with Richard Gere.
Like, you love the character arc. You like a good character arc.
Yeah, his character arc was believable and lived in, and I loved it.
How about hers?
So I think, you know, in a lot of ways, this movie is of its time. Mm-hmm. You know, like, one of the things that you notice right away is that there's two black characters. One of them's a drug dealer, the other's a limo driver. And you just want to go like, okay, 1990. Yeah, 1990 does not feel that far away to me, but when you see stuff like that, you're like, there's no other black people, there's no Chinese people that live in all of Los Angeles.
Right.
How about one person of color?
Well, her roommate. Wasn't her roommate...
Her roommate is Hispanic? Laura San Giacomo. So
Italian.
Okay. Which, by the way, I want to say that when I first met you... Your boobs reminded me of Laura San Giacomo's boobs, which I absolutely adored. Laura San Giacomo's boobs.
I think you told me this before.
Yeah, Laura San Giacomo has the most underrated boobs in all of Hollywood. And you see pictures of her now. She's put on a little bit of weight, and it's all in her boobs. And it's it's great.
Wow.
I'm a big fan of Laura San Giacomo's weight distribution. She's good. You know, it's a wonderful movie. One aspect that I found...
I was so shocked that you loved it, and I'm waiting for your...
Well, no, you know, it's not about this movie, it's about movies in general, because, you know, we talk about the patriarchy and stuff.
Yeah.
And I realized that most of these movies are about women making men not do the things that they're good at or love, because they're better off... like spending time doing a picnic, right? And that's a very female-centric view of the world, right? It's not a male-centric view. Because honestly, one of my first thoughts when I see Richard Gere's character is like, I'd like that.
Right.
He lives alone and he's super wealthy and he just does stuff that he's good at all the time. That seems very appealing to me. Then he meets Julia Roberts and he falls in love and he's like, I'm not coming in today. And like Jason Alexander's like, you're taking a day off? What? and it's like Julia Roberts takes him out and they have a picnic and they read Shakespeare to each other, which has never been done in real life ever. And if someone tried to take you out for a picnic to read Shakespeare to you, you would stab them, right?
Not me.
Not you. You would.
Mm-mm.
You.
I'm an English major.
If it were me, you would like it because you already love me. But if it's like date number three and I'm reading Shakespeare to you.
This is the thing. And the interesting thing that you brought up before is that part of her attraction is going to be the money, is going to be the success. Yet the woman tries to take them away from the success.
Yeah.
Still wants the success.
That's my theory as to why all women love kings and princes, and they want to be princesses, because princes are wealthy but don't have to do any work to maintain the wealth.
Right.
So, like, when a woman marries, like, he's a corporate raider who works 20 hours a day, then he's very wealthy. It's like, the reason why he's wealthy is he's a corporate raider who works 20 hours a day. So, yeah, that's always going to be... sort of the dark side of the fairy tale, which is like you can't get away from the money and how easy the money makes everything. I think that you wouldn't make this movie today. I don't think
you wouldn't make it in the feminist society today. I mean, this movie would be crucified.
Right. Because, like, even all the hero moments are moments that he creates with his money. Right? The
Oh, true. I didn't think about that.
Like, the big moments that... Everything
yeah, great,
is wonderful
you.
So far. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Our wonderful waitress has come over to ask us how we were doing here. Like, even the hero moments are built from his money. Like...
The limo at the end?
Well, I'll get to the end in a second, but like when he does when she goes, big mistake, huge.
Oh my gosh.
That's because he spent an obscene amount of money.
Right.
When they go to the opera, he puts her on a private jet and gives her a $250,000 necklace. And you know, it's on loan, but you know, even when he snaps the necklace when she reaches in, you know, if that were costume jewelry, maybe she doesn't laugh quite so hard because it's not that big a moment, right? So you can't get away from, like, the power dynamics and the sexual politics of a very wealthy guy taking a girl off the street. But I will say the movie does do, like you said earlier, a lot to make them likable despite all that, because he does attempt. He goes, like, I'm buying you a condo, and I'm getting you a car, and I'm getting you off the street, and you know... And she's like, I'm not going to be a kept woman like that. Mm-hmm. So she's like, you know, she loves him and she wants to stay, but she does have the, like, you're doing it the wrong way.
And they have her deciding to go back to school even before, like, she decides to depart from that life even before he comes for her.
Right. I love the ending because I'm eating. I'm sorry, everybody. It's so good. There was more calamari.
I know. You just had to go for it.
I love the ending. Because I honestly had forgotten how it ended. And when he was talking to Hector Elizondo, who, by the way, favorite part of the movie, the hotel manager, as just a decent soul.
Yes.
Who is not used to someone like this and trying to protect his hotel, but like when he sees that she's like a good person, they bond. Loved him.
Yeah.
But... Richard Gere is like sending the $250,000 necklace back, and Hector Elizondo goes, shame to be giving up something so beautiful. Wink, wink.
Yes.
And it sort of like wakes him up to the fact, like, oh, I need Julia Roberts. I honestly thought he was going to give her the necklace, but he does a recreation of her dream when she was kept in the attic as a little girl, where he climbed up the fire escape to rescue her. Mm-hmm. But he was afraid of heights. So him doing that, it wasn't just a symbolic, like, hey, I love you. It's, hey, I'm willing to overcome my problems for you.
And so
that
amazing.
Is a beautiful moment, and I loved it.
You know what? I really thought you were going to have something to make fun of. I really thought that there was going to be something that you would
Well, I mean, the fashion, it is very...
Oh, well, that is
1989. Like, mm-hmm. My goodness. How many wide shoulder blades and... double-breasted suits. Although I will say...
The dress she wears is gorgeous.
Everything that Julia Roberts wears, which is weird because it's usually men's fashion that stays sort of classic.
Mm-hmm.
I think she could wear... I mean, I don't know anything about female fashion, but like she could wear any of that
today. I
think
some of the fancier dresses don't change as much, like just like a men's tuxedo.
Like the spotted one that she wears to the...
Oh, I love that. The black hat. Dress when she... Wears a necklace.
Absolutely.
Do you like the prostitution outfit too?
No, I don't. I because it's too much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, believe me, I like a slutty outfit. You know that.
So.
But just not too much.
Also, with the flossing in the bathroom, that's a scene that makes her likable.
Because you think it's drugs.
She's trying to hide it.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah. No, I thought it was wonderful. I think that, you know, there's. It's obviously, like, it's built around this idea of a fairy tale, mm-hmm. and it's built around the prince saving the princess, and there's that great line, you know, what happens after the prince saves the princess? She saves him right back. And I thought it was a great line.
Did you cry at all? You usually cry during movies.
I cried at Boogie Nights.
Oh, geez.
When we rewatched it, I cried at the end of Boogie Nights.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I didn't see you crying.
You didn't turn around. I was wiping my face.
Really? Yeah.
Which, by the way, a lot of people in Boogie Nights had to wipe their face.
Good segue.
We're going to switch over to Boogie Nights right after this. But before we go, Chris, I do a lot of talking. Tell me your thoughts about Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman? I mean, I said that, honestly, it's a lot of what you thought. It's clever. It's endearing. I wonder if it wasn't Richard Gere and Julia Roberts, if it could be pulled off.
Yeah.
I think you just love them and you like the little moments between them.
Yeah. Well, see, here's the thing. Richard Gere is not likable the same way Julia Roberts is.
They had makes two, him more likable.
Well, they had a perfect choice. You know, you have this guy who's...
What? I love how you say, Christy, let me hear your thoughts.
And yeah, yeah.
You just jump right in.
Well,
wait, I have a thought on that.
Your thoughts were wrong. Let me fix those thoughts. And we are doing Pretty Woman. I'm a patriarch.
Yes, yes.
And you...
Right.
I saved you from your incorrect thoughts. No, I wanted to say... Richard Gere, I think they do a very good job of making him sort of aloof and not connected to the world. So you don't like him the same way you like Julia Roberts immediately. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's just this, like, you know, all angles and elbows and knees and smile.
She's like a baby deer.
She's just beautiful and wonderful and nice. But as you see Richard Gere sort of adapt to her, mm-hmm. he becomes more likable through the movie, which in turn makes her even more likable. So
I think I like the fact that it's both kind of a fish out of water scenario, where obviously she's a fish out of water, right. But so is he when trying to accept the
right.
new emotions he's dealing with.
As a girl, like a little girl, you mm-hmm. see this in year 12,
mm-hmm.
the first blossom of womanhood, your first stirrings of wanting boys to give you kisses on your butt.
It didn't happen that young.
What?
And not that young.
You wanted kisses on your butt?
Did not.
I thought that happened for girls at 11.
It does not. We'll talk about this afterwards, but go ahead.
Oh. What were your little Christy thoughts about this?
I remember being excited by watching something that I didn't think I should be watching.
Gotcha.
I remember not exactly knowing, like, what the condom thing.
Right.
I remember like the no kissing on the first date. I also remember being able to just being so excited I could tell my friends that I saw it.
Gotcha. So it was like a, yeah, no, that R-rated movie, I know what it's about. It's about right. boobs.
No, I loved the romance, the fairy tale, the right. The Julia Roberts, you know, coming in and being beautiful and her outfits. I think I liked everything on a like a surface level.
Right.
And now I probably appreciate it on a deeper level.
Gotcha. I do wonder if all girls... Because, like, girl movies about sex, generally, like, the camera pans away and then it fades to the next morning. I wonder if girls raised on that think that's what happens. Like, you kiss for a while and then it's the next morning somehow. Must be very upsetting, like, the first time a wiener comes out and you're like, no, we go to bed now. Like... We have to wake up in right. our makeup from
right.
the night before.
Makeup or makeup. We take showers and we just like wake up looking great.
Yeah.
And we smile and laugh. Mm-hmm. We wear bathrobes.
And you say, wake up, sleepyhead. And you generally have food waiting for me.
True.
Yeah. Nah, it doesn't happen, folks. It's a lot slimier in real life. And we're going to talk about the slime of real life, especially as it pertains to sex, in our next segment, Boogie Nights, which we will do after we are done our entree. And we are back. We have not eaten yet. We had a salad.
It was good salad.
And we're trying to get the timing right on this.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is we're going to start. And then when our entrees come out, and mine has gnocchi.
Gnocchi.
Am I saying it correctly?
Yes, you are, baby.
I always say it wrong. I used gnocchi. To just say gnocchi.
Gnocchi.
You don't say that. You say gnocchi.
Gnocchi. It's kind of G kind of comes in a little bit.
Gnocchi.
All right, enough of the gnocchi.
I would like some gnocchi.
Now I feel like I can't say it. Now someone says something over and over again and like gnocchi.
Yeah,
now I feel like I can't say it.
It's pronounced wonky. I love wonky.
So, we have to get on to Boogie Nights.
Okay. So, I asked you as we were watching it last mm-hmm. night, and I know we're not supposed to talk about it before the podcast starts, but I turned to you in a moment of joyous glee and said, you love it, right? You love it. And you said, no. So, break my heart, Chris. Just break it.
So, you're making this difficult. I wouldn't say... Can I say there are... aspects that I absolutely loved and enjoyed.
Okay.
But there were also aspects that I thought were unneeded and didn't make sense, nor... I don't feel like it took me to a close, to tell you the truth. Like, I know they do that little song at the end. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Okay.
So, first of all, Marky Mark as a young guy, wow. I've never seen it. I didn't know this was his breakthrough role. I'm also going to say Heather Graham as a young girl, wow.
So you mean wow, like attractive?
Oh, yeah.
You think Marky Mark's attractive?
Oh, yes.
He's got a killer body, but he has like a little rat face.
No, he's... Oh, please. Why would they, like, cast him for this movie if he wasn't hot?
They went to like 35 other young stars. And no, it's true. They went to like 35 other young stars and they couldn't get somebody to say yes to playing a porn star. He was like their 35th choice.
Really?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, I think he's adorable.
All right. Hold on. Hold up. Hold up, woman. You have a choice right now.
Okay.
Jay, I died in a terrible accident, mm-hmm. and now it's 4 days later, and mm-hmm. you're over me.
Mm-hmm.
And Marky Mark from 1996 is standing there ready to do you.
Okay.
Or Richard Gere from 1990 stands ready to do you. Who do you get done by? You can only choose one.
Does he have that prosthetic?
Nope. Just whatever he's born with.
Oh, whatever he's born with.
He does not have Dirk Diggler's big wiener.
Honey, I would choose your corpse.
I've been cremated.
Do I have the ashes?
You don't. I was shot into space. Elon Musk put me on a spaceship and sent me to Mars. You got to choose. Who do you choose? Come on.
At this point in my life, I guess Richard Gere.
What do you mean at this point? You like a slower role?
Well, I like some gray, some dignified. I like older
Why
men.
Did you point at me when you said gray? And then point at me again when you said older.
I said dignified and pointed to you as well.
Yeah, that's the lie part. Yeah, I just got done telling you how undignified I am. So Richard Gere is who you choose?
I mean, that's a tough one because...
Richard Gere has a nice body.
He has a great body, but yeah. Marky Mark's just adorable, and I think he would just, you know, he would have a lot of energy, which I appreciate, but I do think that there's something to that. What?
He would have a lot of energy, which I appreciate.
What?
I'm learning about you. The whole point of this is to learn about your spouse.
And what have you learned?
I need to have more energy, apparently.
No, not at all.
I shouldn't do the slow-moving Richard Gere moves that I thought were working so well.
Okay, so, Boogie Nights. So, I love you so much that your joy in a movie, when you, like, before you came, I was kind of, like, I get annoyed that you always pick movies that for the first 20 minutes I have no idea what's going on.
What do you mean?
That always just drives me crazy. It's never cut and dry. I'm lost for, there's so many characters, great characters.
Right.
But I'm lost for at least 20 minutes of every movie that you've given me.
But isn't that true of every movie?
No. Were you lost in Pretty Woman?
Well, no.
Okay, like, About Time?
Well, a little bit, as we discovered about the time travel
Notting
and
Hill.
Stuff. Like, doesn't every show have to educate you on what the show is as you go into it?
It's fine. I like some mystery, but not for 20 minutes. But that being said, I love the cast. When I saw the cast, I was like, wow, I can't believe all these people were in the same movie.
Right. It was one of those, like, graduating class of 1997 movies.
You know? Well, see, seeing it now in 2019,
right.
I think that's a great cast. I don't know, would it have been considered a great cast in 1997?
Well, I think in 1997, there was a lot of, whoa, who are these people?
Right. Okay.
Like, who's this John C. Reilly? This guy's great. Who's Philip Seymour Hoffman? This mm-hmm. guy's awesome. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Who's Heather Graham? I knew about Heather Graham because of Digstown.
You knew better.
Enormous boobs that are not affected by gravity and big, bright blue eyes.
Enormous boobs not affected by gravity. She was like 19.
Yeah, that's what I mean. that's the time in your life when it's not affected by gravity. So, yeah, I was well aware. She was on my big boob radar.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, honey. You talked a lot about boobs.
Yeah, I really have. Uh-huh. This has been the Boob Cast.
Yeah, let's please. Well, you know, it fits in.
We should do a spinoff podcast called the Boob Cast.
And what will we talk about?
Boobs.
Who's?
Any
boobs.
Like good boobs, bad boobs?
Sure. That'll be the
side
spinoff.
Side boob, under boob? It's all the different flavors.
Uh-huh. Okay.
All right, so go on.
Okay. So, I think I love you so much that your joy is infectious. When I see the movie through your eyes, I always tend to like it more. That being said, before you came, the things I noticed was, I mean, Seymour
Hoffman.
Seymour yeah. Hoffman. John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
Amazing. Like, every single time John C. Reilly was with Mark Wahlberg,
yeah.
Hilarious.
Oh, yeah, he's
like,
great.
They just bounce off each other, and they love each other, and they get along, and they crack me at that. Those scenes were gold.
Everybody should have a friend like Reed Rothschild. Everybody. Who just will go yeah. along with you no matter what.
Like when they first met and it was, how much do you bench?
Yeah.
Say the same time. You didn't go. like those moments were so good.
Yeah.
And they were sprinkled in there. And I liked Don Cheadle's character. But I thought they were like, and I also liked his camera usage.
Right.
I loved how he did a lot of scenes of no cuts.
Yeah, a lot of one-ers.
A lot of one-ers where he went in the pool, he went out of the pool, yeah. He swung around. I really appreciate that.
It was so much the movie of a 26-year-old guy full of vim and vinegar. Mm-hmm. Hey, check me out.
Yes.
And you love it.
I do. I loved all of those, the way they would pan around. It looked like he was playing with things, but it was working.
Right.
What I didn't like, I think things came and ended without resolution. Like when the guy, what's his name that we like from Curious George does his voice?
Wait, what?
Macy.
Oh, yeah, William Macy.
Okay. Kills him and kills himself.
Right.
It's just done. There's no, then they just leap forward. There's no, you know, after scene. What happens? There's just a picture of him on the wall near where he killed himself.
Yeah. No, I think that that's the resolution. I think this is, like, a lot of what Paul Thomas Anderson does, this is a movie about family. And it's a movie about how family is, you know, sometimes cobbled together in a way that's dysfunctional. And I think the whole point of this is to take you into a world where people don't generally think of you as human beings, right? And I think Howard Stern does this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've always said that the magical thing about Howard Stern is he talks to a porn star the exact same way that he talks to the Duchess of, you know, whatever country. It's the same. You're a human being, and I'm interested in these aspects of your lives. So, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson has this non-judgmental lens. Like, here, I'm going to take you into this world. And I'm just answering your question. William H. Macy was the cousin who kills himself, right? And you can see in the short number of scenes, like, he has made a mistake. He's married Nina Hartley.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she is cheating on him constantly. And he can't take it, so he murders her and then kills himself. But he's not forgotten. He's not brushed away. There's lots of murders in this movie. Lots of death. And here's one that has been kept. And here's this awful picture, probably painted by Amber Waves.
Yeah.
But we still love you because you're part of our family. And that's the resolution. That ending scene was the resolution of all those stories.
Yes, the ending scene was a resolution. It was beautiful. They had great music. But it's interesting that it started so light, got so dark, and then ended light.
Yeah.
And you never figure out, like, there's so much death in comedy. There's a lot of suspenseful moments.
Right.
Like when he was getting donuts, Don Cheadle was getting donuts. I couldn't take it.
Yeah. You were waiting for something bad.
I was waiting for something bad.
Hold on.
You know, three people died.
Speaking of waiting, they just put down our dinner.
Okay.
It's steaming, mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the gnocchi.
Right.
And
what's on top of your gnocchi?
Pork.
Pork, okay.
In honor of Boogie Nights, I figured a cylinder of pork was the best choice.
Yeah, that's about the same size.
Yep. No.
Put together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Let's go eat, and then we'll return and do final thoughts on Boogie Nights.
Then
our conversation about each other. All right, I'm eating a gnocchi while you talk.
Okay, just real quick. I wanted to say that I did like... All right, we'll talk later.
Okay.
Bye.
We'll back. Cheese, folks.
Cheese.
And we're back.
We are back. We
Fast.
Weren't gone that long ago.
No, it's going to be instantaneous when you're listening at home or in the car or on the bike.
Mm-hmm. Or taking walks.
Subway. Boat.
Could be a boat.
Hang gliding.
No, not hang gliding.
No, I think like 80% mm-hmm. of our listeners mm-hmm. are hang gliders.
No.
No, I've done the research.
Parachute jumping?
No, don't be crazy. Yeah. Hang gliding.
You're right, I went too far.
We ate so quickly here. It was probably like a 3-minute break.
Mm-hmm.
We downed it.
Mm-hmm.
That sausage was, or the pork sausage. Pork sausage, yeah. It was so good. Your chicken margarita, delicious.
Pollo
margarita. And my gnocchis.
Did not disappoint.
Delicious. Again, here's another... We are not obligated to talk about Casa Gennaro this much. Trust me. If you want to have a meal that you're going to talk about
right.
annoyingly to your friends mm-hmm. for the next month, this is the place to come.
How about I brought one pint of sauce home for my parents, and then they ordered me to go and get them six...
Yeah.
next time to freeze.
It's you got to come here and check out the food.
Okay.
All right, so let's finish our discussion.
Let's go from pork to pork.
Yes, pork to porking. let's finish the discussion and we'll do our roundup and what we learned.
Okay, so let me say again, remember before Pulp Fiction, you said that I would appreciate Pulp Fiction more if I'd seen it at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a takeoff of it.
It's not a takeoff.
No, I think takeoff the camera usage and some of that stuff.
I've often said that, you know, Pulp Fiction came out in the winter of 94, and if I remember correctly, I think this came out in the spring of 97.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're looking at like 2.25 years in between. And honestly, I think that this is the first truly great movie that was post Pulp Fiction, that was obviously inspired by some of the stuff Pulp Fiction did. Because if you remember that time period, there were so many tremendously terrible Tarantino-inspired movies like Seven Heads in a Duffel Bag or Things to Do in Denver While You're Dead, 2 Days in the Valley. Just so much ugh.
So this is one that you like, that kind of emulated it.
This was one that continued the idea that, oh, I'm living through a film revolution right now.
So back to the movie.
Yes.
Sir, I think I liked the comedic beats. I liked every time he was doing it, how they would look at him sideways. I love how he would karate chop all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think the dark notes for me didn't balance well. So I think that's kind of what hurt it for me, like his mom being so awful.
Right.
But then there was no kind of like turnaround from that. I never knew what happened. And the dad loved him, but was too scared of the mom, it seemed like. That
right.
was so unclear, him just sitting in the room listening to her scream at him.
But you don't see the completion of that with him finding Burt Reynolds and Amber Waves as a new Juliana.
Amber Waves?
That was her name.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Juliana Moore.
Yes, but finding no, because he has sex with his mom, his new mom.
Right. I mean, it's an Oedipus complex made real. But, you know, it's, again, I think that the takeaway is it is a gross, weird family.
No, I love the family part. I love the fact at the end the Roller Girl had her own room.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling her to clean it. That part was beautiful. But then we get into the suicide. Then we get into the gay bashing.
Right.
Then we get into the Roller Girl using her skate and just bashing somebody in the head.
Well, that's during our second act, All Is Lost. You know, as that.
Right.
You know, they need to go through that to come out the other side and realize I need to change things up.
I will say the dark scene of them going in to sell baking soda or baking powder. That was actually kind of comedic in a way. Suspenseful, but comedic,
oh, yeah.
But interesting.
Well, I mean, you have Thomas Jane as Todd. One of the greatest mustaches of all time.
Can you do that?
Can I grow a mustache like that?
Yeah.
You're looking at my mustache. Imagine,
I know, but
if
can you like keep going?
Well, I mean, look at I have a beard.
Yeah.
So just imagine that this part is not there.
Oh, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
No, his was longer.
Right. Well, I mean, I think he had more space between his nose and his mouth.
Yeah, probably.
Because this is about as hairy as you can get.
Mm-hmm. So, by the way,
isn't it interesting? Thomas Jane was in a TV show called Hung. It's like he got typecast as being in big penis related projects.
True.
Yeah.
Very true. I was going to say, you always throw me.
Sorry. Alfred Molina, the Chinese boy throwing firecrackers.
Yeah, it made you just jump, and you thought it was ridiculous. At the same time, it was suspenseful. At the same time, it was kind of funny.
And the Night Rangers playing in the background.
Right, and the songs, and he's like, you actually like the drug guy.
Oh, yeah, Alfred Molina is super likable.
Like him. He's like, oh, he's on drugs. So I think where I didn't see some resolution for me was they did all those, you know, Julianne Moore, she loses her son. I guess at the end she gets kind of Mark Wahlberg back.
Right.
But she's heavily addicted to drugs. Heather Graham, heavily addicted to drugs. Mark Wahlberg, heavily addicted to drugs. Burt Reynolds, who actually, I like his character throughout, but he also led these kids down a negative path.
Yeah.
And then he starts to lead another kid down by replacing Mark mm-hmm. Wahlberg. And doesn't take any onus. Like, he brought them into this world. Right. And then the second that Mark Wahlberg is obviously showing problems, he cuts them off.
Right.
So I feel like he didn't really... Are they off drugs? Does she get to see her son again? Is it better? There's
No. My answer to that is no. But everybody is broken. right? These people are maybe more broken. Maybe they're broken in ways that are more easy to condemn.
Mm-hmm.
But they're better off than a lot of us because they have a support system around each other. You know, that Amber's going to film Don Cheadle's yeah. Bucks yeah. commercial, you know?
And his wife was drawing a picture while the baby was in the pool with Uncle Jack. Or
yeah, yeah, and it's... I think, to me, the beauty of it, which I cried like a baby at the end of it, was that you can be broken. Everyone's broken. But you can also be made well by people who love you and take you as you are. Now, I'm not saying if you did a sequel to Boogie Nights that took place in 1989 that three-quarters of the cast would be alive.
Right.
You know, that probably most of them are headed towards a negative path. But I think that... You know, we're all in some ways in a bad place. And the only thing that gets you out of a bad place is people who love you. And I think it's sweet that these people all found people who love them.
I will say one of the bigger moments for me was when he came to Burt Reynolds, because I did not know if Burt Reynolds was going to shun him
right.
or accept him. And that hug was definitely amazing.
Right. And
I'm sorry, too.
Think about all the buildup that we need to get there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the fact that you weren't sure because you didn't know you didn't know what his reaction would be until he shows the love that Marky Mark
never got
from his own mom and dad.
I love these. I'm born with one talent. I got one thing. So the gay bashing scene.
Oh yeah, I've spoken about this at length.
Yeah, I feel like I don't even understand where it was. It just to bring him to his low, along with selling drugs,
I think that, you know, gay for pay is like a real thing in the porn industry, you know, and that a lot of porn stars have to do it. I think that sort of the politics of 1997, again, maybe not super sympathetic
mm-hmm.
towards it. I mean, obviously, he's the victim there, but
right.
I think part of the politics that don't work now is that, like, it's seen as like his lowest is having to be a gay prostitute, where it's like, well, I guess when he was essentially a prostitute for heterosexual, it's like he's king of the world. But now he's a gay prostitute, it's like, oh, his life is over, you know?
And I know we talked about this scene at length, but I do think it's interesting the guy that took him over seemed really into it.
Yeah, well, so here's in a short version. This is what I said the night of 1997 when we were walking out of the theater. My friend James Brennan and I had gone to see it. And all I could talk about was like, let me get this straight. In the movie, this is what happens. Mark Wahlberg gets picked up by this guy in a pickup truck. And it, like, obviously he's like, hey, I'm waiting for somebody. And it's like, wink, wink.
I think it's a pickup truck.
Well, whatever.
Okay. Pickup truck comes and beats him up.
Even if it wasn't a pickup truck, it was emotionally a pickup
okay.
truck. They drive to like an abandoned lot, and then, you know, he pays.
He negotiates. You only have 10.
For Marky Mark to do some stuff to himself mm-hmm. while he watches. This is like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Ten minutes of him giving like advice and
right.
encouragement.
Harder, faster.
Right.
Comedian, keep going. As he's very into it.
Right. And then after 10 minutes, his buddies show up in a pickup truck
mm-hmm.
and they beat him up.
Right.
Okay, so obviously it was planned.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm obsessed with is when they were putting this plan together.
Right.
He's the leader, and he must have been like, oh, okay, guys, we're going to totally gay bash this weekend, which we all love. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to find a prostitute. I'm going to bring him to an abandoned lot. I'm going to make him do stuff for about 10 minutes. Then you guys show up and beat him up. I think if I were in the gay bashing gang, I would have raised my hand and said, why don't we just beat him up like right away? Like, why do we need 10 minutes of you watching stuff? Like, can't we just beat him up right away? And I'm just picturing right. him going like, no, I'm in charge of this group, guys.
This is my plan.
And we got to make sure,
mm-hmm.
okay? And imagine me doing that, but for like 2 hours.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
Where I'm just like poorly improvising out this scene again and again. Like, remember at the end of Divergent? And all I could talk about was how messy the city was?
Yeah. Why'd they build the cities up again?
Why? Christina.
Why?
It's been 100 years mm-hmm. since World War III.
Mm-hmm.
They've already figured out everybody has to wear a different jumpsuit.
Yes.
But there's still rubble in the city. Clean the rubble.
Yes, the architects all got killed.
The rubble cleaners?
I don't know.
After 100... Chris, I'm the laziest person alive.
Right.
If the house is messy for like 4 months, mm-hmm. I might look around and go, oh, gee, I should probably pick up the socks.
Mm-hmm.
5 months.
Okay.
If I'm living in a city and like they're building technology that allows me to shoot bullets that aren't real bullets uh-huh. but feel like real bullets, mm-hmm. I might be saying, our priorities are off, everybody.
And they would find out you were divergent.
Yeah, no.
That's why.
They would find out that I was realistic and they would kill me. That's why 25-year-old attractive women should not create sci-fi worlds.
Okay, let's go to what we... So I guess if I were
Christina,
to give a grade...
The best sci-fi worlds are created by people who look like George R.R. Martin.
Oh, that live in that world, develop that world.
Who wear suspenders and engineer hats. The second he got popular, what happened? He stopped writing.
I know.
You have to live in a basement, mm-hmm. and no one should want to do anything physical with you, and then you'll create great science fiction.
I have to agree with you.
All right, so what have we learned about each other? Do you want me to go first, or do you want to go first?
So first of all, I want to say that I don't think I would watch that movie again in completion, but I would like to watch parts of it again. So I think overall, I was at a 87%.
That's way high.
Yeah.
That's a B+.
Yeah.
Well, you were leading me to believe that it was like a C+ at best.
No.
Okay, I'll take a B+. That works.
Okay.
It's an A+. You're wrong, but you're not as wrong as I thought you were going to be. So what, you want me to go first?
Sure, babe.
All right, here's what I learned about you. You are unabashedly unafraid of the fairy tale. That when I first met you, you put up a pretty tough exterior.
Mm-mm.
And I think that has colored my thinking about you for quite a long time. But the more I get to know you now that it's been 20 years, the more I've come to understand that, like, it's okay for the prince to climb the fire escape and rescue you every once in a while, and you are A-okay with that. And my takeaway is, be more prince-like in my day-to-day.
But I would rescue you right back.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure. But, yeah, I think that that you know, I make fun of the romance novels that you read and all that sort of stuff. But I think that you are deeply romantic at your heart, and that maybe embracing that a little bit closer won't be such a bad idea.
That would be wonderful. What are you going to climb for me?
I'm going to buy you a $250,000 necklace. I'm going to throw it at you and say, satisfied. And then I'm going to walk away and lock myself in the basement.
You did not learn a lot from this movie.
No, that's what princes do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what I learned about you through Boogie Nights, it's scary that I have to look at this movie.
What do you mean? You learned I like young Heather Graham. And I think you did a little bit, too.
I think she was beautiful. I love the rollerblade aspect, roller girl.
No, she roller skate. This did not take place in the movie A Prayer for the Roller Boys.
Rollerblades? Yeah, when did people use them?
I feel like mid-90s. That's when it became popular.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I actually thought she was like a waitress that was a roller, like that everyone there was like rollerblading, but regardless.
It's an interesting thing because like it's a lot of commitment to keep your roller skates on all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I like, you got me high tops. And I find them very difficult to put on because you got to lace them up.
Yeah,
and you got to lace them down, and then.
Well, if you never, maybe that's why she doesn't take them off.
Oh, so maybe I should never take off.
Right, never take them off.
Hmm. See, I think that's a bigger problem than the drugs. Like, what I mean is, if you came to me and said, "Jay, I'm thinking about a new hobby. I'm either going to do crystal meth, or I'm going to wear roller skates 24 hours a day,"
mm-hmm.
and I had to pick one.
Mm-hmm.
I think by a hair, crystal meth.
Really?
Well, at least you get more done.
Roller skates, I get more done quicker.
Not really. Not going
up
steps.
You should see the high school teacher and me. I was like, oh, there's no way that girl would be out of her roller skates in high school.
Well, I mean, first off, it was 1970-something.
Oh, true.
The male principal would probably be like, she gets to do whatever she wants.
So what I learned about you is that you love creativity.
You love when people can create something that surprises you and that you revel in it, that you makes you happy just to, as you said before, it makes you happy to be alive, to see something like that, that it makes you enjoy your life better when other people can put out a product that you enjoy.
Yeah.
It's very endearing. That you see the cast, that you laugh loudly at certain parts, and that you have such a love affair of films that actually goes deeper than your, I think, deeper than your, just, you say you like movies, I think you love them. I think it's a part of your fabric. And I think you love stories through films.
Yeah.
And that sometimes emotionally, you're able to connect better through a movie than you are in most real life.
Yeah, well, I'm broken.
You're not broken.
I'm pretty broken.
I love when I turn around and I see it in a movie theater and you're crying your eyes out. That's very, very awesome.
I'm just saying, I think you're right. But I do mean that. I think that that's maybe a takeaway we should all have sometimes, is like, you go to even a throwaway movie, mm-hmm. you know, and having written and acted in mm-hmm. a few throwaway movies mm-hmm. where people probably watched them and went, oh man, what were they thinking? Nobody ever sets out to make a bad movie, and the amount of stuff that has to come together to make mm-hmm. a good one.
Come together.
It's just, and I know what you're doing and I appreciate it, but I was in the middle of a deeper thought. We are lucky. Mm-hmm. We are lucky that, you know, all these talented people move to this one place and they all work together and they collaborate and they make something, you know, even with all the most talented people in the world. You know, this is the 20th anniversary of the release of Wild Wild West is this weekend.
Oh, with Will Smith?
The big bomb from Will Smith.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, that was a $120 million movie in 1999. With the best actors, the best director, the unlimited money, and it still came off as like, ah.
Right.
And people just went, ah. Mm-hmm. Even then, it's difficult to create magic. So every once in a while, when something like this comes along, where it's like this brand new voice and talent, mm-hmm. and there's so much energy and verve and balls, mm-hmm. you know, and you get done and it's sort of this like messy masterpiece. I mean, you're lucky. You are a lucky human to be alive in a world where this is being made.
And I love that about you.
All right. And on that note, we are going to go have dessert here at Casa Gennaro.
And your cappuccino that you love.
And the cappuccino that I look forward to every single
every time.
Month.
Amy, I'm so excited for all the food. And you're like, oh, I can't wait for cappuccino.
Ah, cappuccino. It's so... The Italians have it right.
They do.
You end every meal with a cappuccino, you're going to be laid back.
Yep. Why don't you go to Italy with Gennaro tomorrow?
I am actually sneaking in his luggage, and he's taking me with him.
Oh, so that's why you've been dieting.
That's right. Hello, Naples. It's me, Jay Black. And they'll be like, oh, dinner and a movie. And I go, no.
No, movie and a dinner.
And they'll be like, that's a stupido. That's my Italian, by the way.
Yes.
All right, folks. Next month, we'll be back with two new movies and two new meals here at Casa Gennaro. Thanks for joining me, Jay Black, and her...
Christina Black.
Wow, you used my last name. That's nice.
I know. I took it.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
The Speaking Podcast, brought to you by our friends at House of Cupcakes, serving you in Princeton, East Brunswick, Clifton, and Saudi Arabia. The winner of Cupcake Wars offers 35 different flavors, perfect for a special occasion or just a sweet treat. HouseofCupcakes.com. The Speaking Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Flemington Car and Truck Country, 16 brands of cars and trucks. I'm a loyal customer buying my last two trucks there and can tell you no one beats the deals or offers better service. Visit Flemington.com. The Speaking Podcast, brought to you by our friends at Casa Gennaro's on Route 27 in Kingston. Call 609-683-1212 for reservations. They're open for dinner every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Ask for my favorite special, the Veal Spadia. Best Italian food in Jersey.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.